All right, Marshall, if you want to call a court to order.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Connolly, Judge Bryan, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The argument that is before us this morning is A20-1367, Linda Cobb Thompson, appellant. On behalf of herself and all others similarly situated versus St. Anthony Leased Housing Associates 2 LLP et al. Respondents. We are delighted to have with us for the appellant a student attorney who will be arguing the case. I know that Mr. Cox will be introducing him in a moment. Counsel, each of you will have 15 minutes for your primary arguments, and counsel for appellant, you will have, five minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. We'll have an audio recording of this Zoom call later on the court's website. And Mr. Cox, if you could introduce the student attorney, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Prentice Cox, representing Linda Cobb Thompson, the appellant. The argument today will be made by a certified student attorney in our Consumer Protection Clinic at the University of Minnesota Law School, Jordan Hughes. So I'll turn it over to him now and disappear.
Great. Thank you so much. Mr. Hughes, if you could then just state your name, party you represent for the record, and here you go. I'll give you 15 seconds extra since we started with some introductions. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, this is Jordan Hughes on behalf of appellant Linda Cobb Thompson. This case is about the permissible rent limits under Minnesota Statute Section 474A.047, or Section 47. The sole matter before the court is whether the phrase area fair market rent in the statute is a reference to the same area fair market rent that forms the basis of the entire federal housing scheme. If it is, as a plain reading of the text would have it, then the ruling below should be reversed and Ms. Thompson's case allowed to proceed on its merit.
Mr. Hughes, does your entire argument depend on whether it's established or authorized so that it can't be both?
No, Your Honor. Thank you. The entire argument depends on the meaning of area fair market rent. Established by was a critical term to the meaning of exception rent, which was argued below, but that term is no longer in dispute here. Both parties in the district court now agree that no exception rent applies to the legends, and under Section 47, the rents of Ms. Thompson and the other tenants must not exceed either the area fair market rent or an exception rent. So now if the rents of Ms. Thompson exceed the area fair market rent, then they cannot be compliant with Section 47.
So I'd like to just jump in and clarify one thing, because I think I remember from the appellant's brief that the appellant characterized the respondent's argument as kind of inconsistent, because they were arguing it fits under either of the two terms in Section 47. But I think I just heard you say that now the parties agree that the only term is fair market rent. Is that a change from the way you characterized their argument previously?
It's not. It's an observation that in the respondents in Dominion's response, they abandoned the previous argument below that the basic range is in fact an exception rent, which is clearly not under the statute. So now the only question on appeal is whether area FMR as used in Section 47 can encompass the rents charged by Dominion. And this is a question of statutory interpretation, which the court of course reviews de novo. I would also point out now, this is not a case about the details of a particular federal housing program that was not incorporated by the legislature. The statute to be interpreted is a state statute, and the question is what the Minnesota legislature meant to incorporate, or what it meant when it incorporated the federal term of art. And the court below dismissed Thompson's complaint due to an error in legal reasoning that led the court to interpret area FMR in Section 47 as including rents in excess of the area FMR as established by HUD. Because area FMR is a legal term of art with a universally understood meaning, the plain language of the statute and binding Minnesota precedent should compel this court to reverse the ruling below.
What is the plain meaning of counsel of area fair market rent if it's not in reference to any HUD regulations?
The plain meaning of it is a term of art, and the binding precedent of the Minnesota Supreme Court under State v. Kennedy is that is the plain meaning. There is no ambiguity when a technical term of art, a technical word or phrase with a peculiar and appropriate meaning is incorporated. So the plain meaning of fair market rent is what it's defined as and what forms the basis of the entire federal housing scheme. And that's defined at 24 CFR, section 888.111.
So the fair market rent is that, your argument is that the area of fair market rent is the fair market rent as established by HUD pursuant to its regulations, right? It's not some other establishment of fair market rent by, you know, a renters association or something like that. The authority that determines fair market rent is in fact HUD.
That's correct. Our argument is that fair market rent means fair market rent.
Right, but that doesn't mean anything unless we know who says what it is. So I could decide a fair market rent right now should be like $600, but you know, who cares? So we need to know who says what it is, right? And the plaintiff's position, the appellant's position is that it's HUD, right?
That's correct. It's the fair market rent established by HUD and defined by HUD at section 888. And this is similar to the term that the Supreme Court dealt with in Chisholm, where it interpreted the term actual cash value, and found that although that has, each of those words has an ordinary meaning, when you take that phrase, that's a legal phrase and it has a legal meaning, which is ordinarily thought of as a term of art. And when that term of art is incorporated by a statute, the legislature intended the technical meaning of the term, and that's not ambiguous.
So let me ask this, because I think I understand the way that the arguments were made here. So you are telling us that we should not look at, to understand the meaning of this statute, we should not even look at the phrase exception fair market rent, because we are now limited to looking only at area fair market rent, because the district court considered area fair market rent to include the basic range payment standard, and that's what now appellants respondents agree with and are arguing on appeal, even though they presented a different argument to the district court previously. Are we excluded? Are we precluded from deciding in this case that 109% of fair market rent falls within an exception fair market rent under section 47? Are we precluded from deciding that and finding that to be our reason to affirm?
You're not precluded from it because it's an interpretation de novo. All of the parties have abandoned this reasoning, and I can go through why quickly. First of all, it's not clear that the Housing Choice Voucher Program has anything to do with Section 47 at all. Section 47 incorporates this term, area of fair market rent, and exceptions to it. There is no reference in Section 47 at all to the Housing Choice Voucher Program, which is at CFR Part 982. It's a different subset of federal regulations. There are many other parts of the federal housing scheme that refer to FMR, and that include terms including exception rent. For example, the Section 8 Project-Based Housing Assistance Program, the Home Investment Partnership Program, the Continuum of Care Program, and FMR and exception FMRs are used to calculate flat rents for public housing.
So if we were to look at the whole, and I appreciate your focus, you're asking us to focus on the first term, which is area fair market rent, but just indulge me that I want to focus on the second term, exception fair market rent, which I understand is not used in the payment standards, the HUD regulations for housing choice vouchers. Tell me what the appellant's position is as to the meaning of exception fair market rent. What does that mean?
Well, it's not clear. Appellant's position is that the Minnesota legislature adopted a dynamic reference that allows some HUD discretion to make exceptions to the fair market rent where applicable.
You referenced HUD, I think, there. I'm trying to figure out what you think.
Sure.
Does exception fair market rent, is that unambiguous on its face, or is it an ambiguous statute that makes us, those two questions, I guess, but why you seem to both look at HUD and not look at HUD when it comes to the exception fair market rent. And I'm trying to figure out what your position is there.
Of course, HUD is important. So Section 47 says both the fair market rent and and the exception fair market rent are figures established by HUD. So HUD has to establish an exception fair market rent. Appellant's position is that does not necessarily mean that this is a reference to the Housing Choice Voucher Program. There's no direct reference to the Housing Choice Voucher Program. It means that HUD can establish an exception rent for the area. And what's important here and why
does HUD establish anything that's called an exception fair market rent anymore? I know that the voucher program does not, they use payment standards. But is there somewhere else where HUD uses HUD regulations in 2001 when Section 47 was passed, used the term exception fair market rents?
Exception fair market rent is not a term that is anywhere in the Code of Federal Regulations, but there are two places in the Code of Federal Regulations where the term exception rent is used, and neither of these are in the Housing Choice Voucher Program. The first is for calculating flat rent for public housing. An exception rent is where HUD says any figure below 80% of FMR or 80% of FMR is too high for public housing rent. And the second place is in the Home Investment Program.
Which one of those then, if they differ, what does this Minnesota phrase then mean? Like, if you needed to argue to the court, it violated, you know, the exception fair market rent, it didn't fall within there. What would you say exception fair market rent means under the Minnesota statute?
Well, it's not clear to us. And our position is it's not necessary to understand this case. And that question is not on appeal. Our position is that it means essentially what HUD says it means. It can be something, anything. What's consistent across all these programs is these are case-by-case adjudications made by HUD itself.
If we think that phrase might arguably capture the rents here, do we not need to, in fact, decide what that phrase means? Like, when you say it's not in front of us, what if we think it is before us and that we need to, that appellants need to show that it does not fall within it does not fall within exception fair market rent. Don't we need to know what that phrase means to know that it violates Section 47?
Well, what we know is the exception rent cannot encompass in none of the programs. If it means anything with relation to the Housing Choice Voucher Program, it must mean the exception payment standard. It certainly does not mean the basic range, which applies to any FMR with PHA discretion, and it's something unequivocally set forth by HUD as being established by a PHA, as not being established by HUD. And this is important. So whatever it means, it cannot be the basic range. The basic range cannot be the range that makes these rents compliant with Section 47.
I think go ahead, Judge Collins.
Yes, but following up on Judge, so what do we do then? I mean, it must mean something. I think respondent is sort of saying it means something and we're complying with it. So, I mean, where would we look to find that? I mean, is it in the regulation that no longer applies?
Well, it can't be in the regulations that no longer apply. They didn't apply when Section 47 was drafted either. So we can't look to law that didn't exist when the drafters drafted Section 47. And that really is a basic error in legal interpretation that forms the foundation of the court's holding below and Dominion's position now.
As I understand it, the court looked to the regulation that had been repealed because the new regulation was silent. Okay, I mean, am I right on that point, Mr. Hughes?
That's correct.
So, and I understand your point that you can't do that, but I mean, why wouldn't it carry over?
Well, because, because the new regulation did not carry over that language. It abandons that language. And so what changed?
If that's the only place there it was defined, and for whatever reason, I mean, I'm sure, you know, government's infallible, so the idea that it was overlooked is certainly not a possibility under any circumstances. But what do we do then? Go ahead.
Sure, just very quickly. So there are two things to know. First of all, that language was abandoned, but it was not the only language and is not the only language in the Code of Federal Regulations where exception runs applies. Second, when it was abandoned, one thing was consistent, which makes it very clear that exception rents, what was exception rents before, is now exception payment standards now, not the basic range. And that is that there is a consistent limitation on the exception rent in 1998 and today, that it cannot exceed more than 50% of the population of the area. So it cannot be something that applies broadly to the entire FMR area. This was true in 1998 as it is today. The exception is something that's specific for a narrow subset of the population in an FMR area. And now I see I'm running out of time. I really want to quickly just touch on the other issue in the case to reassert that the claims do rise and fall together with the interpretation of Section 47 and the critical language being by the court's opinion below. The interpretation. Oh, I see I'm out of time.
Yes, we deprived you of some time at the beginning though. So that's okay if you wanna wrap up and then you'll have time for rebuttal.
Sure, well, I only want to make the point that the Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedure and case law are consistent here that the other claims are appropriately pled in the alternative. So they should be reinstated together. And if there are no other questions, I'll save my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Mr. Boyd.
Good morning, Your Honors, and good morning, Mr. Hughes and Mr. Cox. My name is Thomas Boyd. I'm here on behalf of the respondents. As the court is aware, this appeal challenges the rents that respondents have charged affordable housing units under the Minnesota Bond Allocation Act. There is no violation of the act, and therefore these claims fail. Even if there were some question as to whether the rents respondents have charged do not comply with Section 47, the statute itself charges the issuer, in this case the city, not the tenants, with the authority to pursue compliance. For all those reasons, respondents ask the court to affirm the district court's judgment.
Counsel, can I ask on that latter point, you seem to be alluding to a standing argument, but I don't see standing being raised and argued in your brief. Or
in our brief, Your Honor?
Right.
We have argued that.
In your argument section of the brief?
Yes. And
also I wondered, and maybe I'm wrong, did there need to be a notice of related appeal if you're challenging the adverse decision on the standing?
No, because that was argued below to the district court, and that's an alternative ground for affirmance of the judgment. So there was no need for a related appeal.
Okay, so you argue that, is there an issue, I don't see it in the argument. I see a reference to standing in the argument section only in a footnote that says that St. Anthony argued standing or something like that. But I don't actually see a standing argument either in the table of contents. I don't recall what the issue statements are and I didn't see it argued.
I apologize, Your Honor. I will.
That's okay.
Look for it, but I we do indicate on page 24, footnote 14.
Right. There's a reference to that having been argued, but I don't see the case law or argument made. But we'll look at that. That's okay. We should get back to the meat of their argument. And I guess my first question for you is, why the change of course? Like, why isn't your argument that a PHA established rate within the basic range is just an authorized exception fair market rent under the Section 47?
Excuse me, Your Honor, that that is our argument. That has been our argument. You can see that argument as having been set forth as early as June 2019 in correspondence with the appellant's counsel.
So that's your argument on appeal. Maybe I misunderstood the brief, and that's easily could be the case. But I had I thought they were, as I understand this case, you know, within the 10% of FMR, the argument by the appellants is that that just simply is not, you know, that's not allowable, like 105% or whatever under the Section 47. And I understood your argument is that you were arguing with the district court, I think, concluded, which is 110% is the basic payment standard, and that falls under the area FMR part of Section 47, as opposed to the exception FMR, which applies to over 110%. Maybe I'm wrong, though, about that.
I think you may be, Your Honor. The district court correctly held that the legislature intended the amendment to be consistent with the HUD regulations, not only with regard to establishing FMR, but also approving what variations there may be from FMR. Prior to the Reform Act and the HUD revisions to their regulations, that was referred to as FMR / exception fair market rents or rates. That's the old nomenclature, but that continues to be the way in which people discuss this. And if you want to
Right. So if we looked at, if we assume it's 105% of FMR.
Yes.
Which term of Section 47 permits that? The area FMR or the exception FMR?
It would be the exception FMR, because that's the way in which it had been referred to previously. And that's the way in which it's currently referred to by the HRA, by the Metro HRA. And I mentioned Exhibit 8 to the complaint. The last page refers to, or is a chart from the Metro HRA, which refers to exception communities, being that range of 90 to 110%.
So Mr. Boyd, let me follow up, because I think there's actually three different ways you could be arguing this, and I'm not sure which of the three it is. The first is that the 105 or 109% is, let me put it this way, that in Section 47, the term fair market rents actually includes a range. That's option one. Option two is that that doesn't include a range, but that the second term in Section 47, exception FMR, refers to two different types of exceptions. The first exception is a small exception within this range that we now look to the HCV program payment standards to look at the basic range. And you might be arguing that this basic range is itself an automatic exception or a small exception that HUD has already allowed. But that's part of the exception FMR term under Section 47. Or you could be saying something else, which is that any exception apart from 100% FMR has to be separately approved, and that that has to be part of exception FMR, that there isn't a separate, two different tiers of exceptions, but any exception falls under that. Sure. And I'm not sure which of the three, maybe there's a fourth, but I think it's those three.
I'll try and keep it to three, Your Honor. And I will
We'll probably provide the fourth ourselves, Mr. Boyd.
Door number two is the appropriate one. FMR is not itself a rental range. That's something that HUD separately establishes and publishes on an annual basis. That's the bogey, that's the numerator. And then HUD determines what's allowed with regard to rents using that range as a, or using that fair market rents bogey as a factor. And what it had done previously was referred to that as exceptions. So they established, and these are two separate exercises. That's absolutely true. That cannot be debated. HUD publishes FMRs, and HUD approves what types of rents can be charged for fair market housing. Within that second bucket, which used to be called exception fair market rents, Today, they approve basic range payment standards. And then they also can approve upon application exceptions to the basic range payment standard, not exceptions to the fair market rent, exceptions to the basic range. So those are two examples of exercising one kind of authority, approving the types of rents that PHAs like Metro HRA can approve. And the shorthand used by the industry, our clients, the shorthand used by the legislature in 2001, the shorthand continued to be used by Metro HRA, is to refer to that 90 to 110% range as the exception. Those are the exception communities. And that's okay,
let me jump in because I think it's important for us to know, as we're now focusing on the meaning of exception FMR as it's used in Section 47. Are you saying that that's unambiguous? Or if it's ambiguous, are you then looking to principle of construction that would go beyond legislative intent that would include this agency in practice? The agency is using this definition. And so therefore we can look to what the agency is doing in practice to inform our interpretation of a term.
Your Honor, I would respond by saying it is unambiguous. There's no question that that's what the legislature had in mind. That is the way in which the terms have been used. That's the way in which they continue to be used. The legislature did not define those terms. The legislature did not specify particular code provisions in the CFR. Instead,
so where in the HUD regulations is the term exception FMR used to mean an exception to the range as opposed to an exception to FMR?
That would be what Judge Abrams referred to as the 1998 HUD regulations, or the pre-merger regulations.
Is there any part in the current HUD regulations where exception FMR, that term, means an exception to the basic range? That exception FMR means something other than an exception to the range. I think that there are regulations that talk about exception FMR in the sense that you need HUD authorization to go above that basic range. But I'm wondering, if you're saying that it's unambiguous that same term used in Section 47 means something different than what HUD regulations seem to define it, I would like you to point us to something in the HUD regs that would tell us that exception FMR means basic range.
They do not, because exception FMR is not used in the current regs. What is used is the payment standard amounts, both of which have to be approved by HUD, neither of which are FMR qua FMR. It's an entirely separate regulation, an entirely different activity. So what used to be globally referred to as exceptions FMR is now referred to as two types of payment standards, payment range and exception to payment range. And you can find that in the 1998 regulations referred to by Judge Abrams. You asked whether or not I believe it's unambiguous. I do. I think the statute only can have one meaning. Alternative meanings would be absurd. But even if the court were to consider...
Can I ask, I'm sorry to harp on this, but it helps when we're talking about whether it's unambiguous or not. When I look at your brief on page 22, you say, therefore, this is the end of the first paragraph, therefore, area fair market rents, which is the first term in Section 47, must be interpreted to mean the PHA selected program standard amount within the HUD established basic range. As I read that, your argument is that the basic range, PHA basic range amount, falls within area fair market rent, not within the exception. But I think I hear you arguing something different today. And I want to understand the argument so I'm not mischaracterizing what you're doing. And I'm also want to see how that connects them with the plain, unambiguous language of the statute.
The point we were trying to make in the brief, and the point I'm trying to make now, is the legislature was clearly deferring and adopting HUD's regime with regard to its adoption of the fair market rent and any rents that it approves to be charged. And but to the extent
you said they clearly adopted the HUD regime, but it seems like there's two different HUD regimes potentially that we're talking about, and they use the terms from the 98 HUD regime, not the terms in the 99 going forward, even though we're past at the time the legislator did that.
But let me just emphasize, and I apologize if we're not clear enough in our brief, they adopted two things that HUD does, and they're separate things. One is establish FMR, and the second is to approve what rents can be charged for affordable housing. And let me just focus on that for a moment and take the appellant's interpretation of what the legislature did. With regard to that second activity of approving rates, they're saying the legislature departed from what HUD had approved and instead wanted to impose its own regime that allowed rents of 90 to 100% FMR, not allow 100 to 110% of FMR, and then to go back and defer to HUD on anything above 110. That's absurd. There's no reason why that would be.
If I could interrupt, because I'm not sure why it would be absurd. That's a strong, loaded term, right? To me, if the state legislature felt like the HUD regulations were wrong to include a basic range, and in other words, they're looking at the fair market rent and they want it to be exactly what the fair market rent is, and anything above that should be approved first, then maybe they are saying that they don't want any rents between 100 and 110%. And the only exception to FMR that they want to see is something that has been approved by HUD, which means it has to be above 110.
And maybe absurd is too strong, but that would be arbitrary, which likewise would make it an absurd interpretation. There is no reason why they would defer to HUD on some rents but not others, when both the basic range and the exception to the basic range all have to go through the same APA process. And if they're trying to protect the tenant, why would they say, we don't trust HUD for minor adjustments between 100 and 110%, but we abdicate. We don't even retain any control. We give them carte blanche authority.
I think one of the arguments is that the criteria, and I'm gonna go over here for a second, but the criteria for the HUD exception is over 110%, the criteria are laid out in the regulations. And that I think their argument is that the PHA, you know, tinkering within 10% are not regulated, or you know, you can't look at the regs and see what that basis for the change would be.
I had thought their argument was that the what they call the exception FMR goes through an APA process. This all goes through an APA process. That 90 to 100% to 100 to 110% basic range goes through the same process. So it would be arbitrary to say HUD's okay on the first part of 90 to 100.
The regulations go through the APA, but I think the determination above 110% have two specific criteria, as I recall from the regs, of when.
Above.
Yeah.
Yes.
And but I think within the range, there aren't criteria.
But the basic range goes through the regulatory process.
Okay.
If I may just make one point that I didn't see in the briefs, and that is, I know it's a de novo review, but I would remind the court that Judge Abrams was not only a district judge for a long time, but prior to that, he was in the House of Representatives, he was chair of the Tax Committee, and he very likely voted on this particular amendment. And I commend those credentials to the court for your consideration of the district judge approach to the interpretation of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Hughes, your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court. I first want to very quickly point out that Judge Smith is absolutely correct that there is no standing issue raised on appeal. The issue was not raised and it was not briefed for appeal. So there's no standing issue in this case. The only question is the statutory interpretation question, which brings up a broader theme of the problem with a respondent's argument now, which really is a moving target. And they have changed position. And if I may quote from the respondent's brief on this appeal at page 18, respondent said, quote, "The term exception fair market rents is likewise undefined in section 47, but is also readily and appropriately determined by reference to the exception payment standard amount separately approved by HUD under the HCV program," unquote. So up until now and up until this argument on appeal, the respondents have been arguing that the exception rent meant exception payment standard, and now they have changed.
Isn't the short answer to that is they had to deal with Judge Abrams' decision, which did favor them, and they are sort of arguing around it. And, you know, I mean, I understand your point that it may be inconsistent, but it's certainly not outrageous and not something I haven't seen before. And in any event, you know, we are allowed to affirm on different grounds as long as, you know, we get the law right. So, you know, the main problem I'm having, actually both with respondent's argument and the appellant's argument is, you know, the briefs were like two ships passing in the night. I mean, you're talking about the statute, he's talking about the regulations. We've got the problems with some of the regulations that were repealed. You know, it is what it is. And then we have Judge Abrams, and I have no doubt that as a former legislator, he thought best as to what should be going on. But, you know, our problem is we sort of have to deal with all of this. And, you know, why wouldn't we look to HUD's regulations or language to sort of fill in the gaps which seem to be here? As opposed to simply saying, well, it's the statute and we don't look at anything else. But clearly the statute is intertwined with HUD setting these, you know, exceptions to fair market rates or fair market rates or ranges. And so why wouldn't we try to, you know, look at all of that as opposed to just saying, well, we can ignore this because maybe they've dropped it below.
Thank you, Your Honor. And fair points, a couple points to this. First being that there is no, so this is a state statute that we're interpreting, and the regulations, the federal regulations, are only important to the extent that they're incorporated in the state statute and actually shed light on it, not to the extent that they add this veneer of complexity to what would otherwise be a very clear statute. Now, what's important to note is there is no HUD established exception for this area. The Metro HRA exception that Mr. Boyd points out, well, that doesn't actually shed any light on the statute. That does not govern what the statute means because that's not something established by HUD. And we might ask the fair question because we presume the legislature knew about the scheme, knew about basic ranges, knew about FMR, and said, and the legislature clearly said, that the terms it incorporates are terms that are established by HUD. We might ask the question, why would the legislature use those words? Why would it say established by HUD if it meant the basic range, which HUD itself says is not established by HUD, is established by the PHA. And HUD says that at 24 CFR section 982.503.
So let me jump in and ask you the same question I asked Mr. Boyd about whether these terms, are you saying that they're unambiguous or ambiguous? The exception FMR rate term?
Of course, our position, and it's been a consistent position, and this is the only reason I bring up the inconsistency before, because it's been a consistent position for us that these are unambiguous terms, that the text is clear, and when the text is clear, it should be controlling, and therefore the judicial analysis and inquiry should be complete. FMR means FMR, and these rents exceeded FMR.
What about the exception FMR, and whether that term means an exception to the range, or whether that term means the range? Is that ambiguous or unambiguous?
That's unambiguous. If the Housing Choice Voucher Program has anything to do with Section 47, then that unambiguously must be a reference to the exception payment standard. And that's clear from the carryover from the 1998 regulations to the 1999 regulations, if the court is to look to those to fill in the gap. Although, as we say, that's not necessary. But there is consistency here, and it's unambiguous. There is no reference and no indication that the legislature meant to incorporate the basic range with this statute. And if there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Hughes. Nice job, counsel. Thank you both for your helpful arguments today. The case is submitted, and we'll have a decision out in a statutory time period.
Thank you.